Hey, podcasters, it's Monday. Lots of crazy stuff going on, from, you know, Code Pink taking over the embassy of Venezuela in New York, and then Venezuelans trying to convince them, no, you're on the wrong side, to Israel and Palestinians, and we've got Rashid Tlaib and Omar, what's her name, Ilhan Omar, on the wrong side of the issue with Israel and Palestine. But we'll see how this plays out, because we also sent an aircraft carrier this weekend. We also have a different understanding, a new concept in socialism, corporate socialism or corporate leftism. Michael Rechtenwald joins us to talk about how that's a thing. He thinks that socialism is coming to America, lock, stock, and barrel, and it's running down the road towards us, and we're running into the arms. He said, but it's a corporate socialism, he explains.
We also have some sad news about the sales for both the Al Gore and Clinton family crusades across America trying to do theater shows. Hasn't been working out apparently that well.
No.
It's stunning development.
Ticket prices are lower than you think.
Yeah.
We get into that.
And I'll say also an interesting thing left out of the media when it comes to MS-13, the gang that the president has cited many times as a real danger, and the press has gone to work to say, no, there's nothing. That's a nothing, 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 nothing burger. We show you really what it is, and it's pretty serious, and this is coming from the mainstream media. Now that we're past that particular crisis, they're free to admit how bad MS-13 is. We have that. Plus, Glenn's going to eat some locusts or something.
No,
next week.
We're going to work on it. That's a story from CNN, which is down, by the way, in prime time by 26%. And they're stunned. All this and more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Imagine being evicted from your home for not paying your home equity loan back, but you never took out a home equity loan. That would suck, wouldn't it? I mean, literally evicted from your home. We've been telling you about this couple in Portland, Bill and Betty. They had no idea that somebody had taken their house and forged the title, gone over to a bank, taken all of the, you know, equity loans out that they possibly could. Bill and Betty start getting these things. They discard them. We didn't take out that loan. The bank insists that, yes, you did take out that loan. They're like, no, it's not us. Next thing they know, the house is foreclosed on, and they've had to spend thousands of dollars to get their house back. I mean, it's an absolute nightmare. We can get a free title scan to you right now to make sure that your house is still your house and this hasn't happened to you. Fastest growing crime, according to the FBI, and only one company is standing guard on it. HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Register your home now. Make sure your title has not already been tampered with. $100 value for free. HomeTitleLock.com. Go there now. HomeTitleLock.com. So a Islamic Jihad sniper fired at an Israeli soldier. So what happened? The Israelis fired back. Then Hamas decided, let's go to town. Over 600 rockets. 600 rockets fired into Israel. Four Israeli civilians were killed, the first civilians killed since the seven-week Gaza war in 2014. Why? Because they just fire rockets. They're looking to kill anyone. Thank goodness that there wasn't school yesterday, because schools were blown up. Kindergarten. Did you see the picture of the kindergarten class? I mean, they were so lucky that nobody was in those classes. High-ranking Hamas operative was killed. Now, he's the guy responsible for transferring money from Iran to Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Everybody was going crazy. It is, you know, what's really fascinating to me is how people on the left, and I mean, I shouldn't say on the left, how Democrats, the people that we know and love in our own family, how these people don't understand what side they're on. If you saw this weekend, you saw the liberals that were going after the Venezuelans in New York, the anti-Maduro Venezuelans. Did you see that? They were screaming at them in New York about how Maduro wasn't so bad, and these anti-Maduro people are just, they just want war, and they're just trying to help Trump out. It's nuts what's happening. Then you have Rashida Tlaib saying that the New York Times is dehumanizing our Palestinian people who just want to be free. Who are your Palestinian people, Rashid? Can we play the audio I just heard on the 4 minute buzz? Play the audio, please, of Ilhan Omar. Listen to this.
Most of the things that have always been aggravating to me is that we have had a policy that makes one superior to the other. And we mask it with a conversation that's about justice and a two-state solution when you have policies that clearly prioritize one over the other.
Such as?
Just our relationship really with the Israeli government and the Israeli state. And so when I see Israel institute law that recognizes it as a Jewish state and does not recognize the other religions that are living in it, and we still uphold it as a democracy in the Middle East, I almost chuckle, because I know that if we see that in any other society, we would criticize it, we would call it out, we do that.
Excuse me? Don't recognize others living in the area? She goes on to compare it to Saudi Arabia. Excuse me, that's an Islamic state, and you can't even have a Bible. There are churches, there are mosques everywhere in Israel. Everywhere. There is a huge Christian and Muslim population in Israel. There are Christians and there are Muslims in the Knesset. That's their House and Senate. What do you mean? Why aren't you speaking out about places like, I don't know, Iran or Syria or Turkey or Saudi Arabia or Libya? Is it okay to have an Islamic state? The day you come out and say it's wrong that it's an Islamic state, I'll listen to you. I won't agree with you, but I'll at least listen to you when you say it shouldn't be a Jewish state. Now, we want to bring Jason in. He's our chief researcher and also military affairs expert. We sent the USS Abraham Lincoln over to stand guard against Iran. This is coming from Iran. Tell me, first of all, the high-ranking Hamas operative that was killed, responsible for transferring money from Iran to Hamas. What do we know about that?
This is all linked. So that specific high-ranking commander, just like you said, that's his job, is to take the funds that come over from Iran and give that to Hamas, give it to Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and a number of other groups that Iran supports in Israel. It's very telling that Islamic Jihad, that's the main Iranian group that's in Gaza, that they're the ones that started all this. They started it. They knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew Israel was going to retaliate. Hamas then responds with overwhelming force. Like you said, that's conservative, is 600 rockets. It's probably closer to 700. Absolutely insane in a two-day period. Now, as soon as this aircraft carrier went into the Gulf, I was like, I know exactly what this is. The rumors were saying that we decided to do this because we had gotten word that Iran was planning attacks on either U.S. forces or U.S. allies. That, to me, says Israel all the way. They knew what the strategy is. And the strategy is good, Glenn, for attacking Israel. It should have worked during the Six-Day War. And it's all the Arab nations surrounding them, they have more people than Israel does. It's a war of attrition. So if they hit them from multiple sides, from multiple borders, Israel shouldn't be able to hold. In fact, Israel should not be here today. It was divine intervention in my mind.
Yeah, from 67, it was divine intervention. There was no way. What do you think could hold it this time? Besides divine intervention.
Divine intervention or the United States government going in and helping them. Because no one else will. Absolutely no one else will. And now as the people that you were just quoting are actually trying to change that. They're trying to change public sentiment so that they don't have the social contract to go in and defend Israel. But it's looking like we have the administration in place, at least for now, that's going to, you know, take a stand with them. But if we wouldn't show them that we were willing to put overwhelming force in the area to respond, because that's what this was. I guarantee if this would have escalated to the next level, if we would have set this one out, then I can almost guarantee that Hezbollah would have been, they probably already had the orders. If nothing happens, if no carrier moves into the area, Hezbollah moves down into Israel, moves down into Gaza, and then this becomes that war, just like the Six-Day War, multiple different borders, and Israel shouldn't be able to defend that.
Egypt wouldn't be in on it, though, this time.
Egypt would not be.
Saudi Arabia wouldn't be in on it this time.
Nope.
So you would really only have what? Maybe Syria, Turkey, Lebanon, Iran.
Yep. Which is a very strange bedfellows because, like, the alliances are different now. Turkey's Muslim Brotherhood, but they also hate Iran. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that they would all come together in a six-day war type scenario. But really, that it would be hard enough fighting with Hezbollah. I mean, consider Israel's already fought a war with Hezbollah, and it didn't go very well. Did not go very well. They've had years and years and years to get the funding, to get the weapons. That's why the blockade is there. And that's something that Ilhan Omar or Rashid Tlaib are not even talking about. They keep calling this an occupation force. There are no occupying troops in Gaza. There are none.
Yeah, you know, when Rashid said, when are we going to stop dehumanizing Palestinians? Well, I don't know. I'm not dehumanizing Palestinians. I don't know anybody who does dehumanize Palestinians.
Hamas does.
Except yeah. The Palestinians and Iran. They don't care about the Palestinians.
Yeah, it seems like when you want to strap a vest that explodes on a person, you're kind of dehumanizing them. Even if it is to kill the Jews and that wonderful, glorious goal you have.
When you push mothers and babies to the front line,
yeah.
Knowing that they're going to be slaughtered.
When you put them next to the top terror targets to make sure that, you know, to kill them, you have to also have other casualties that they can then exploit.
Yeah,
dehumanizing these people?
Yeah, you know.
When the Hamas leadership, when they fire rockets or when they make a decision from their headquarters, they know exactly what's going to happen. They know a retaliation's going to come. They know a bomb is going to come from the IDF. What they do is they immediately abandon those buildings and they go into the civilian buildings next door. So that when you hear that civilians die, that's by design.
Mm-hmm.
They do that on purpose and they know how the media is going to cover it. And the media falls for it every frigging time. It's absolutely...
Here's where I think this is falling apart. I think the Democrats are so overplaying their hand. And not by choice. I mean, did you see Nancy Pelosi come out this weekend going, you know, we really need to kind of stay in the middle ground? I don't know if you saw this, but she's like, you know, we should be, you know, we really need to kind of remain moderate in the middle. What she's saying is we should just be crazy progressives, not Marxist socialist Islamicists, because that's where they're headed. And I can't believe that the American people are with open borders. They are with Islamic terror. I just don't see them standing with care. I do see them caring about things like the Uyghurs. You know, I tweeted something last night when I was going through all of this. I'm for the Uyghurs. I think what's happening in China to the Uyghurs is an atrocity. Where's care on that one? It's an absolute atrocity what's going on. I mean, they could all be killed before America even or the world even wakes up. They are liquidating people in China, this entire Muslim community. And I'm all for standing up and making sure. I mean, I was very disappointed when Donald Trump took that off the table. in his negotiations this weekend, he said he wasn't going to push for the Uyghurs' release. I have to tell you, I was really disappointed in that. So how can I have Islamophobia if I'm for the Islamic people in China, but I'm against the people, the Palestinians, because of the way they behave? They're being used, and they're being used by the Muslim Brotherhood. They're being used by Hezbollah. They're being used by everybody, including Tlaib, including Omar. They're being used. I feel bad for the Palestinian people, but I am not for their cause, because their cause is driven by terrorists. And I just, I find it hard to believe, but, you know, hey, I told you once, I've told you a thousand times, you won't recognize your country. I don't recognize my country anymore, so I don't know if I can predict my country. But if my countrymen are still awake or alive at all, they're going to see the things that are happening, and they are not going to want to stand with the extremists in the Democratic Party. We'll have more on this coming up. Right now, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It's 1-800-FLOWERS. I've been reminding you that Mother's Day is fast approaching. It is now just days away. It is this coming Sunday. 1-800-FLOWERS is here. They've got a really beautiful bouquet for you. Now, when you order a dozen sorbet roses, 1-800-FLOWERS, we're going to give you an extra half dozen for free, plus a glass vase at $29.99. So that's 18 sorbet roses plus the free glass vase for only $29.99. Look at these. These came in last week. These are the roses from 1-800-FLOWERS, and we just jammed them into a vase. So, but look, they're blooming. Not a single petal has fallen off. These have been here for a week. Order now. It's available today. It's only available today. So you get 12 roses, pastels, and they'll add another half dozen in, and you get it with the glass vase for $29.99 only at 1-800-FLOWERS, today only. 1-800-FLOWERS.com. Use the promo code Beck. That's 1-800-FLOWERS.com, promo code Beck. We break for 10 seconds, station ID. Let me give you this one. Okay, so we had the crazy liberals in New York screaming at the Venezuelans who were protesting outside of the Venezuela embassy. Now, they were anti-Maduro people inside the embassy. Of course, it's all pro-Maduro, whether they personally are or not. That's the stance of the government. Maduro is the leader. So you had all of these freedom people, all Venezuelans, they're protesting in front of their own embassy. Now, these guys have skin in the game because their families are there. These white liberals come out and they are just hammering these people standing up for Maduro. It's like, how are you doing this? How can you get up in the morning and go, yep, I'm on the right side. I'm absolutely on the right side. I'm for Maduro. What?
Just a simple bus driver who rose to prominence, Glenn, and is trying to do the right thing for the people. It's amazing when that is the dynamic, when people who actually have family members there, who actually have been handed the downsides of this whole situation in real vivid ways, are being protested by people who walk out of coffee shops and are telling them how they should feel about socialism. They'll defend it to the death. They usually do.
So let's do another one, because they'll defend this to the death too. They'll say, oh no, this is an isolated incident. You watch. I don't know. Did you see what happened in Philadelphia at the mosque in Philadelphia?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so let me play the video here, if we have the video. This is from a mosque in Philadelphia where the kids are celebrating Umma. Oh. We don't have it. I thought I saw it earlier. Mm-hmm. Umma Day, where they were wearing Palestinian scarves, they read poetry, and they sang songs. And the songs were about killing for Allah and killing for the mosque in Jerusalem. And subjecting their enemies of Allah to eternal torture. Okay, so in Philadelphia, at the mosque, they were singing songs about beheading infidels and sending Allah's people to eternal torture. Anybody who is against Allah.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Welcome to the program. We were just talking off the air. I just saw Endgame this weekend. We won't go into details, but it is. I didn't have anybody spoil it for me, but I had people say to me, oh, it's the greatest movie of all time. It's a blah, 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 blah. And I was like, shut up. I don't want to hear that because I don't want to up my
expectations. Yeah.
But it was not the greatest movie of all time, but it is really satisfying. It is.
I think it's solid.
Yeah, really solid. Mm-hmm. And probably the most satisfying ending to a series I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, Star Wars is ending. They've got episode 9. Coming out in December.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's going to be half as satisfying as this one was.
Well, I can't either.
Two solid movies in that series. Maybe two in the entire series of Star Wars. I love Star Wars movies, but really.
I think the first three are solid.
I think the first three are solid.
The first two. Return of the Jedi.
The first two
is
are
a bunch
brilliant.
Of Ewoks.
The third one's solid.
It's not that good. Go back and revisit Return of the Jedi. It is not that good.
You always had a problem with that.
It's not nearly as good as
the
first two.
The Ewoks were just so
stupid.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was stupid. Yeah. It was the precursor to Jar Jar Binks.
And then it went to the prequels, which we all know were disasters. I thought, I'll give the first one back, even though it was basically just remade the first movie. I'll give episode, I guess, 7 some credit. I kind of like that one. You know, 8. It has not been a consistent success for one of the biggest series of all time. I mean, it's really been uneven.
Uneven is generous.
Yeah. And where Marvel has, up until recently, I thought has been really pretty even. It's been really, really very good all the way along. It's had some clunkers, but not like the consistency of Star Wars. That thing was just destroyed.
It's kind of amazing that it's just powered through all that, though. I mean, it's powered through 3 prequels that universally everybody hates, basically.
And that's why,
and because it had 30 years of love.
Yeah. I mean, we loved it so much, we've endured the last 5 that have been totally subpar.
Yeah.
And we still look at it as, oh my gosh, the new Star Wars is coming out.
That's amazing.
How is it possible? I still look, I hated the last one, and I can't wait for the next one.
Oh, I can't.
What other movie could you, I can't think of another one like that. That's how beloved the first three are.
To me, it is turn. It's. I'm.
Are you not looking forward to it?
I'm looking forward to it, but it's not like. No, no, no. It's not like I've got to be there. Like the new Godzilla is out.
I want to see that.
I'm going the day it opens.
It looks awesome.
Oh my gosh! Have you seen the reboot of the Godzilla movies?
How many reboots have there been?
The latest
couple have been
good. Yeah, I saw the latest one, I think.
The one with
Bryan Cranston?
Yeah.
That was solid.
Yeah,
that was solid.
Rock solid.
Is that related to this new one?
Yes.
It is.
Yes, okay. It's a continuation of this one.
I got to say, and just the high, like the trailer has sucked me in completely.
Oh my gosh, the trailer is fantastic. Rafe and I were just on the end of our seats. We were like, yes!
I'm totally 11 years old when that thing comes on.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of Godzilla
as a
kid.
No, I was
kid.
Never
a fan.
We used
amazing.
To joke about Godzilla. Yeah. It was so bad.
And isn't this like, doesn't it have like Mothra in it? And
yeah,
some three-headed dragon? And like,
yeah,
it's all the big
all
characters
yeah.
together
yeah.
at once.
It's what the Japanese used to do occasionally. They made Godzilla the hero. And he fought off the evil monsters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so great.
That's what this one is, yeah. Right?
So no, that's what he did in the last one.
Dumb.
I still love it. I don't know why. It's again, like I have no, I sometimes will make fun of superhero movies because I don't have any interest in them. Or, I mean, even like fantasy movies, like Lord of the Rings. Everyone's like, the greatest movies of all time. I have no interest in them at all. And yet here I am pitching for Godzilla.
Yeah.
It's not, there's
I know,
not
it doesn't
a lot of
seem like your
there.
Style.
No.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know why. Giant monster. I like the disaster movies. Like, I like the giant, you know...
Towering Inferno?
Yeah, like, I...
Earthquake?
They're just... I don't know why. There's no reason for me to like those.
Good. They're none of those good ones, though.
None of them were good.
None of them were good. And there's no good disaster movies
Airport.
Now.
No, I...
San Andreas. You saw San Andreas.
I saw San Andreas. That was horrible, but
you had
fun.
To see San Andreas.
Yeah, that was fun. I like The Rock, man.
The one with... Yeah. Awesome. That's what I thought it was, The Rock. And then he did one called... Skyscraper?
Yes, I saw it.
Recently, you saw it?
Oh, yeah,
it?
I saw that. It's The Rock. You got to see The Rock. It's fun.
It's not saying it was the best one, though. No.
It's worth an on-demand
it's fun,
rent.
Though. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it. You'll be bothered by some of the physics of it.
That's a real understatement.
Yeah. I'll bet.
But it was well done for that type of movie, just like San Andreas was. Like the ridiculous, over-the-top disaster things going on, and so many times they're running away from the earth falling behind them, and there's towers falling 9 inches behind them, and they're not moved. They keep running. It's that type of stuff. As long as you don't mind overlooking that, and you sort of celebrate it as the ridiculousness that it is.
It's like Day After Tomorrow, where they outrun the instant freeze.
Okay.
If we could just run into the library, we'll be fine. Because the cold can never come into the library.
No.
Books repel cold. We all know this.
No, it's the best insulation you can find.
Yes.
Yeah. If it's going to instantly freeze people, animals, instantly...
Library.
Library.
It's the only place.
New York Public Library. That's where
even
you go.
The windows,
everybody knows it.
The windows... Nah, they'll in a library. Even the windows are—they're
fine.
They're fine.
They're fine.
They're fine. Totally fine.
Don't worry about
it. All right, you have to suspend disbelief in all of these movies, but
fair. It's a fair assessment.
But may I say this? We're living in a time where you have to suspend disbelief to live.
That's true.
I mean, I got to give you this headline. I got to give you this headline. Then we're gonna take a quick break and come back with something else Pat wants to talk about. Where is it? Here's one. Atlantic readers advocate for diversity in medical schools. No, I don't want diversity in medical. I don't care if they're all Hispanic, all black, all white. I don't care.
If they all belong, that's what I want. Do they all belong there?
Do they belong in medical school?
That's downright dangerous. If that's how you're going to choose your students?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. No. Then there's another story. Gosh, where is it? I don't have it now. It's a great story about a biological man who says he's a woman, is a male female opera star now playing a male on stage.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Can't even follow that.
He's
now.
A male.
Okay.
Claims to be a female.
All right.
He is a male-female opera star playing the role of a male on stage. So,
which he biologically is. So it's not much of a stretch.
Not really a stretch, but I would just like to point out.
Wow.
And you think Godzilla is ridiculous? Yeah.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We go to Michael Rechtenwald now. Michael, are you there?
Yes.
Hey,
hi Glenn, how are you?
Good. How are you? Are you still with NYU or not?
I am quote unquote retired.
You're retired,
but it's I can't really say more.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I'll let the audience infer what I mean.
Okay. All right. So you're also the author of Springtime for Snowflakes, which I think is a fantastic story. You are now writing a new book based on a question that I gave you that you couldn't answer.
Yes, that's right.
And what was the question?
I think the question had to do with, what is it about the socialism that I guess it was more like, why are so many leftists out there? And even in corporate America, we see this leftism all over the place. So I wanted to investigate, you know, with all this woke capitalism going on, with all this, you know, leftist embraced by corporations of a leftist agenda. I started trying. This is really puzzling me. I was like, what are they doing? Why are they promoting leftist ideals?
For like, for instance, Gillette, did the, you know, all that woke crap. Nike took Colin Kaepernick. All of these things. And you think that the answer has been that they are just placating and going along with the times. But you don't buy
Right. Not at all. I mean, I don't think that corporate interests would, you know, just placate one of their consumer contingents and embrace this kind of ideology, you know, unless it actually benefited them in the long run. And I think it does. And I thought that through and thought about all the ways, in fact, which what I'm calling corporate leftism benefits these global monopolistic corporations.
Okay, so this seems counterintuitive because you would say there's no way that these companies, now I can understand it with tech like Google and Facebook, if they're in bed with the government, they have all of the information that they could ever need, and I can totally understand that. And it frightens the crap out of me. But how can a company that is interested in serving its shareholders be for socialism?
Well, you know, what they want is kind of like, I call it a kind of socialism with Chinese characteristics, which is what they call China now. And that is that there's monopolies on the top and everybody else is socialism for everybody else. In effect, it's, you know, what is socialism really but a monopolization of the means of production by the state and every other area of life. So all you do with corporate socialism is you replace the players who are controlling the means of production with corporate players and their monopolies. It's effectively the same to the people on the ground.
So explain the difference between this and like national socialists, where they did let the entrepreneur or the experts in each field stay in charge of those companies.
Well, this is globalist for one. This is not nationalist. It has to be globalist because they need certain factors to be the case. For example, they need to erode the nation state. The sovereignty of the nation state stands in the way of global monopoly. They need to embrace leftist ideas for reasons that I explained. For example, these leftist ideas work perfectly for what they're trying to establish, and that is that you have they promote these new identity types, you know, transgenderism. They're promoting gender pluralism. They're promoting the breakdown, which will end in the breakdown of the family. They're promoting all of these various elements that actually serve them, because this just makes it just makes it impossible to oppose what they're up to.
How do you, I mean, again, how do you mean by dividing people up into all these groups? How does that benefit them? And can you go over that?
First of all, you create new niche markets, you know, so if you continually create new niche markets, then you just cater to them.
So I did see a story out this weekend that makeup for men is the new hot coming thing.
Right. And that's all intentional. They have to get rid of traditional or conventional gender, because this, you know, is the basis of the family. If you get rid of man, woman, you basically are half a way or more to getting rid of the family as such. And what's the reason for getting rid of the family? The family is a space or a buffer space between state or corporate power. And, you know, so it's a space where people can learn different things and have a different perspective that is not necessarily that of the dominant powers, like the state itself or corporations who are taking the place of the state in effect now. So what I'm talking about is a corporate governance almost that's taking place. For example, if you look at Google and Facebook and all of the big, the big techs, what they're doing is effectively eliminating the public sphere or public space in two ways. One, they make it irrelevant. You know, if you're not saying something online, if you're not reaching people through social or mass or social media, you really have no voice, right? So they make the public sphere, in effect, irrelevant. Number two, then you control what's said on those very spaces because they don't have the obligation of the state to grant you the First Amendment rights, and they're not granting them, as we see.
So I was in church this weekend, and we were talking about how the young men and young women in the church are no longer really even talking to each other. They're all living in a virtual world. They just don't behave the way people have behaved for forever. Now they're right. Just living in this virtual world, and that's what you're talking about, how they control everything.
There's a couple of reasons why that's happening. I mean, marriage rates are down, of course, birth rates are down. This is basically a function of keeping some sort of fractiousness between men and women in order to keep these birth rates down and so forth. And this is, of course, explains the immigration quite a bit. But also, they're living in a virtual world. Everybody is, sort of like a monad sitting on the web. And all of the real communications are taking place there. And then they're censored and they're controlled. And, it's not, as you saw, they just threw off several people that are considered dangerous, right, from Facebook. And this is going to get worse. They're curtailing. They're already curtailing our rights by virtue of, making the public sphere irrelevant and then controlling, by virtue of being private enterprises, what happens with what is expressed on their platforms. And then they're just saying, then they're also limiting anybody who might be challenging this perspective. And that's why these people are being cut out.
So they're not only doing the people that are challenging, but they're also, if you defend them, you're also going to lose your status online.
Absolutely. You can't defend them at all. If you go online and you try to defend some of the people that were just depersoned, if you will, Friday, you'll be just vilified like them, and you'll probably be next.
Yeah, well, Facebook said even defense of those who have been deplatformed is cause to deplatform you.
I'm calling this is a digital gulag, in effect. Mm-hmm. They're putting people in effect in digital gulags where they can't reach anyone else, and they're disappeared from society. It's happening like crazy, and it's a very pernicious development. So they're acting like both corporations and states at the same time. They're exercising the prerogatives of statehood and the corporate prerogatives of profiteering, and this is a very serious danger.
Okay, Michael Rechtenwald, author of Springtime for Snowflakes, which is a great book about his journey and what woke him up and finally got him at the university level to say enough is enough, and it's also the reason why he's now retired. Quote unquote. Michael Rechtenwald will continue in just a second with him first. Okay, so the borders break down, which allows them to, allows these corporations to do business anywhere. One government, it allows them again to not have to worry about the laws everywhere else. Is there any thought to freedom? Michael, how are they getting past the idea of what's happening to our societies is not leading to more freedom?
Not at all. In fact, I call it the simulation of freedom. So what they're doing is because they have these platforms where people are putatively able to express themselves, across a vast plethora of platforms, it looks like freedom. But the terms of the discourse are completely set by them, so they are constraining it to such a degree, and we don't know where this is going to stop. you know, this idea of the Overton window, which is like the allowable space for political discourse, it's going to narrow and narrow and narrow and narrow. And then sooner or later, it'll even come down on the necks of liberals. And they'll see that they're, you know, they've been celebrating the unpersoning and the gulagging or the digital gulagging of all these people that they consider enemies. Well, this could happen to them.
It will happen to them. I think it already is. And to some regard, I think it already is. I've had Joe Lieberman, who was a senator for the Democrats for years, presidential, vice presidential nominee in the year 2000. And he told me that he felt a lot of the old style Democrats, they're now terrified of the new style Democrats because they're not progressive. They are radicals.
Right. And they could Me Too them. They could shame them for not being, you know, embracing the Green New Deal. They could do any number of things to totally ruin them. I mean, you know, I'm not that I have that much sympathy for them, but I mean, it's happening already, of course, to Biden. And, you know, this is true. Yeah, they will turn on a lot of people, you know, and it happened in the Soviet Union. So even true believers were sent to the gulag, were shot in the head. And it really didn't matter. If they changed the terms just a slight bit, you're done.
So, Michael, when you watched the special last week, you wrote to me and said it's vital. Mm-hmm. And then you said that you're writing as fast as you can because you sense the same thing I sense. Can you put into words what you're feeling?
Sure. Like you're saying, they're hastening, for some reason, the development of a worldwide socialism, okay? And it is going to be an erosion of our rights. It is going to impoverish us for the most part. You know, not everybody, but a lot of people could suffer poverty over this. And it's going to be persecutorial, just like the Soviet Union was. And, you know, it's just a nightmare. And it's very frightening. And I was trying to figure out how are they up to this and why are they doing this and why are corporations in effect seeming to support it? And I think people like, Cortez and of course, Bernie Sanders, they're just shills for these corporate socialists. They're spreading on the ground and trying to, you know, get the permeation of socialist ideology everywhere they can. Because this socialism will benefit these monopolists in the end. And that's really what I think is the full picture of what's happening.
So who are these monopolists that you're talking about? Who are these?
Well, you mentioned first, the first said the avant-garde of this is, of course, what I'm calling the Google Archipelago. And that's the title of my next book, Google Archipelago. That they are the leading edge, the digital giants.
And they're
paving the way for the rest of this.
And they actually believe it. These are believers. And in the chapter of your book that I read yesterday, you lay it out very clearly that the problem is their ideology is everywhere. It's in all of the base code.
Yes. It's even in the technology, and I'm going to show how it's actually in the algorithms, of course, but it's in the very infrastructure of the entire internet and web. It is unbelievable, but I couldn't believe it when I started putting the pieces together. It starts with this very utopian leftist communalist idea of, you know, the commons, right? And the internet is going to be this free space of sharing. This is the whole story in the 90s. Now, just like the Soviet Union turned from that utopianism to, say, a centralized state authoritarianism, that's exactly what's happening here. It's going from this utopian commons to the cloud, which is utter control of information in a centralized place by a particular elite. It just happens to be digital, and it just happens to be private in this case.
And they don't see themselves becoming the bad guys because they're just so convinced they're the good guys?
Yeah, I mean, they think they're spreading, you know, the wealth of technology to the rest of the world. That, you know, it is the, you know, they're still trading on this idea that the internet would would serve to enlighten everybody, that it would spread literacy far and wide. You know, everybody will have access to information and all that. So they're still trading on the old utopian ideals of the commons, while they're closing the gates, as it were, on the centralized control.
Michael Rechtenwald, you can follow him at anti-PCNYU-prof.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Male makeup is catching more men's eyes.
Now, as an expert in male makeup, I wear it every day.
I wear it every day, too, and I hate it.
It is the worst thing about being on television. They're like, you're like, I don't want to wear makeup. Forget it. I'm, you know, people know what I look like. And then they say, yeah, I know. That's why you need makeup. We've seen you without it, and you're awful. So they put it on us every day to tell us how awful we are. It's like a daily reminder of how hideous we are as people.
Who's the guy I interviewed on Friday? What was his name again? The Navy SEAL. He worked with... Jocko. So Navy SEAL, this guy is a man's man, okay? He got us out of Ramadi, and Chris Kyle was on his team. Zero sense of humor. Zero sense of humor, at least with me. Interviewed him on Friday, and he's the first person to say no to makeup. And our makeup artist was like, well, but you're going to be on television under lights. And he's like, nope, don't care. She's like, well, but you have like a really bad spot. It looks like a cut on your nose. Don't care. Okay, but I'm going to get in trouble with it. Nope, no makeup. So he sat down with no makeup because he's a man's man. And it's an interesting interview because I liked him. You weren't here for it.
No,
I hadn't. Yeah, I liked him because he's a fascinating guy. But I don't think we'd be hanging out because he's just, there's no humor in him at all.
Well, he's done some serious things.
Yeah. I mean, he led SEAL Team 1, SEAL Team 2, SEAL Team 3, and SEAL Team 7. And I said to him, not good enough for 6? Did not laugh.
Did he kill you? I mean, that's
almost. And he just didn't. He just stared at me. And I went, I'm kidding. Well, they do some pretty serious things. No, I know.
That must have been fun.
Oh, it was interesting. Because I went back several times to try to get that humor thing going with him. And
not really there.
Not there.
Not there with you,
not
at
there.
Least.
Not there. But, so anyway, Jocko will not be wearing male makeup.
The male makeup. But no. It is true. I will say, you know, there was a time where a lot of these things, like manscaping, right? Totally not a thing back in the day. The what is the body spray, the Axe body spray? They're selling God only knows how much of that stuff. I mean, that's just like that's stuff that women used to put on themselves. These are just in just guy sense, right? I mean, all of these things that women, female, now have just crossed over for male with a different marketing.
Isn't this kind of what Michael Rechtenwald was kind of talking about today? He's talking about there's this new corporate socialism. They're behind these things because if they can divide people into more categories, they can sell more product and they have more control over you. I mean, it's really crazy.
And it's international, which was interesting, too. I mean, really a lot of the things he describes kind of strike up like corporatism or even some elements of fascism.
That's why we're not building a border wall. That is the reason. Because the borders are gone. The borders are just going to be gone. If they get there, this is international socialism. This is one world government. No borders. That's just what everybody's after. You don't think?
No, certainly not everybody's after that.
Well,
but
no,
yeah,
no.
You're saying that this is the underlying philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not going to be a border there.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, Michael kind of brought it up. It's really something I haven't heard really argued all that often, but Michael's very smart, and he's kind of going to make this case over the next couple of weeks with us as well, and on more often, probably on TV as well.
CNN. Now, remember, CNN has dropped 26% in primetime ratings, maybe because of stories like this. Maggot sausage and insect ice cream can help feed the world, scientists say. After all, lobsters aren't pretty, but dip these unsightly creatures into warm butter and they instantly become a different matter to most of us. Why then do we gag at the thought of eating insects? Because they're insects, and I'm not eating them. I don't want to eat them.
That doesn't answer the question, why? Why not? If it tasted good, would you eat maggots?
No.
Why? But seriously, why? If they tasted good, why wouldn't you eat maggot sausage if you liked it?
Because they're maggots.
Well, that's not an answer. That's not a why. That's just a statement.
Why, if dogs tasted good, would you eat your dog?
I would not.
Would
you
either.
Notice that I don't?
Yeah, but not eat your dog. You don't eat any meat.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, though. I mean, like, if the reason, what's the difference? Why don't you eat your dog?
Because I have a relationship with my dog.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I view different animals in different ways.
That's a fascinating thing to
explore.
It's true. Yeah. No, it's true.
I do explore.
It's true. It's true all across the world.
My daughter doesn't eat meat. She's gone full-fledged vegan.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's making your life fun.
And so I've said to her, because she didn't, when you know, we have a cattle ranch, and we slaughter our own cattle for our own beef.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I don't like the idea. And I'm like, honey, then you can't eat meat if you don't like the idea. And she agreed with me. She led the way on this one.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like the idea, if you look at the pretty cows and go, oh, those are pretty cows, I don't want to think about the butcher, well, then you shouldn't eat meat.
And that's, I mean, unless you grew up on a farm, like one guy who works here grew up on a farm. He was telling me like that was just their life. Like, they were 9 years old, you know, slaughtering animals.
That was mine, too.
And that's a lot of people grew up that way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, if you're on a farm, that's kind of very standard to you. I think if you didn't do that, though, most people fall into that camp. I mean, Pat says it all the time. It's like, hey, I want to eat the meat. I just don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about where it comes from. And so, like, it's just, that is...
You see, and maybe that's the deal with, like, spiders. I could not eat insects and spiders and... Couldn't eat that.
But
you,
why? That's the question.
If that big blob of that hairy Australian spider was like a really good piece of tender filet inside, still wouldn't eat it.
Well, if they shelled it, took out the hair.
No.
You know?
No, I still would not eat it.
There's I think it's Kazakhstan that has a very a legit delicacy in their country. Very standard traditional cultural dish that's horse stew. Like, it's a stew legit made out of horses. And there was a controversy a while ago because we kept shipping we're not allowed to have horse meat here, but we would just ship them over there. And then the horses.
See, I think that's a problem. If you got horses and they're going to die, if you're slaughtering them, you know, just.
But again, like, that doesn't answer the question, right? Like, there's no. It is a weird cultural thing that we do, and every country does it, which is you pick certain species, you're like, those are just totally fine to kill and eat whenever you want. And those, that's crazy. You'd be nuts if you ate one of those. And it's like, well, the separation factor there, if you're going to eat meat, right, is it should be taste, right? Like, which ones taste really good? If maggots tasted delicious, why would you care? And there is an internal sort of guttural, like, ugh, factor.
Correct.
But, like, it's not explainable. There's no if they made sausage out of maggots, they didn't say, like, you didn't know it was maggots, and you started eating it, and you liked it, and then later on realized it was maggots, you would stop eating it. That's not a coherent decision.
Well, then is it a coherent if I made sausage out of people and it was delicious?
Well, so there's no separation between people and animals.
Well, we are animals. Mm-hmm. We're just intelligent animals with souls. But I mean, really,
right?
There's lots of people that just look at people as animals. We're just an animal. Okay, so why not just...
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly people who do that.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't do it.
But what's the difference? It's an animal. Well, it's still an animal
product.
Certainly
there's a pretty large religious one, if you want to start there.
Well, I mean, no, let's say we're not killing them. Mm-hmm. We're saying instead of burying them, we're using all of their...
There you go. Well, you know what? There you go. Maybe we don't kill people because that's against the law and against many different... things, but maybe when they die, we think about giving people the option. There's human composting now in Washington, first state that just passed it.
I know.
Maybe we offer, you know, a little bit of a Soylent Green option for people. Spoiler alert. Maybe if you're watching that movie right now, you're like, damn it! What, it's been out of people? Are you kidding me?
So I'd never seen that movie until Pat was always like, people, Soylent Green is people, which is like the last line in the movie. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you've never seen Soylent Green? And I'm like, no. He's like, you got to watch it. Well, I watched it and I turned it on. They're like, hey, he's going to work at the Soylent Green factory. And I'm like, it's people, man. Don't eat the people. There's nothing to that movie.
Except the reveal that it's people.
Except the reveal. It's a horrible movie. Except for the reveal.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.